You're listening to the Food Talk Show. Hi there, my name is Sue Nelson, and for the next hour, we're going to be talking about all things food. I'm joined by my fellow presenter, Guy Routledge, who is co-founder of The Food Rush.
Good afternoon, Sue. How are you today?
Good afternoon. Well, it's a bit nutty today. We have nuts are on the menu today.
Oh, I thought it was because you're a bit crazy.
No. We've got nuts on the menu today.
Nuts on the menu.
After last week when we were stuffed full of cheese,
I think I'm still suffering a little bit from all the cheese and
even
all the
chocolate. Even though it was a week ago.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that was great, wasn't it? And it was lovely talking to Patricia of La Fromagerie. You know, when somebody knows so much about their topic and they're passionate as well, she just knows so much about cheese. Brilliant. Anyway.
Inspiring stuff.
So we're joined by Tom Spillane of Andy and Sol. And I must admit that I've got quite a gap in my knowledge about South America. I've only been to Mexico.
You've got as far south as Mexico, but not further.
But I only went for a day.
That doesn't really count.
No, it doesn't count.
No. I've not been there either myself. No, so it's on my list, though.
I want to talk to Tom about that. And then Hiromi Stone, who I've met a few times before. And it's great to catch up with Kinomi Nuts and see where your journey's heading. I can see you've got new packaging. That looks amazing. I'll talk about that. So, Tom, can we start with you? Now, you're not born in the UK, are you?
No, I guess you can tell from the accent a bit. No, I have been over here 8 years, though. So
8 years. Ah, oh, okay.
It's probably toned down a bit.
So, and whereabouts are you from America?
From San Diego, from California.
San Diego. Ah, so not too far from, quite sort of south, really, in America.
Right on the border with Tijuana.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so we definitely have our influences.
Yeah. And what is your connection with South America?
Well, as far as the company goes, Andy and Sol is a relatively new company, a new brand, about a month old, really launched. But we have I have another business that I started with some Argentine partners back in 2013, working on the bulk ingredient side of things of superfoods from South America. So mostly Argentina, but also Peru, Bolivia, Chile.
And what are those superfoods from South America? Things like quinoa and
yeah,
things like
that? Our focus is chia seed, which is produced in Salta, which is the northwest of Argentina, really in the middle of nowhere, Argentina. But also some quinoas from Peru and Bolivia, some of the things like the maca root. And also we're working on a line of Patagonian superberries as well.
So you're from San Diego. You're sort of fairly near the sort of border. How did you sort of get interested in going? Because it's a huge continent, you know. I mean, the whole of the Americas is a huge continent. We've got the South, you know, South America. How did you get a connection there?
Well, first, I guess the Mexicans would probably not like to be told they're South Americans, but further south, the Argentinians.
Yeah, exactly.
No, but south California, anyway.
Yeah, exactly. We can call ourselves that. But really on that sort of things, when I was younger, I lived in Brazil for a bit prior to business school. I did quite a bit of traveling down there. Really love the continent. It's really an amazing place. A lot of places that I would say are, well, I guess you could say undiscovered by people that maybe Americans, Europeans, but really amazing, beautiful landscapes, people and cultures.
I mean, the research here, I haven't been here myself, obviously. I mean, the Andes mountain range is the longest in the world and one of the highest, stretching over 7,000 kilometres from Venezuela in the north all the way down to Tierra del Fuego in the south. Love that, Tierra del Fuego.
It's got a nice sound to it.
Land of the fire, yeah. It truly is a land of contrast with towering snowy peaks in Patagonia, down to the sun-baked foothills of Argentina, over to the windswept altiplano of Bolivia. So a place of great contrast.
It really is. On the landscape side of things, it's huge, towering mountains. Like our chia seed has grown a little bit, not in the towering mountains, but as I said, in the foothills, which are nice and warm and beautiful with the Andes. It's sort of a beautiful backdrop. Love to show photos of that. You can see on our website. For our brand, we're working with a special type of quinoa called Royal Quinoa, which is sort of like, a champagne is from Champagne. It only comes from a specific region of Bolivia, which is at 4,000 meters next to a huge salt plain. So really some really contrasting landscapes there.
So we've got an amazing region full of all sorts of different things. So you started traveling in Brazil and you started going around the you know, sort of other South American countries. You're not from the food industry though. So how did this sort of traveling and your love of food and then superfoods actually sort of come together?
I've been in the UK now for 8 years, and I came after business school. I had a job basically working in oil and gas in project finance banking.
Never mind.
So nothing to do with GSEs.
Well, we don't need to talk about that too much.
So really. Cut that out.
Straight over that.
So worked there for a bit, worked for a Japanese bank for a bit, and where I met my business partner was a small capital raising firm in the city here that was focused on raising projects, money for projects in South America. But together with my sort of background and interest in the region, that's, you know, it was sort of a perfect fit on that side of things. Mm. That's where I met my current business partner, Christian Meegans, who is from Buenos Aires. And we together decided to basically do our own thing, more or less, focusing on something to do with South America and bringing it to Europe.
And that was it at the time?
Not necessarily foods, but something South America to Europe. Mm.
And then started looking around. And what is it about chia seeds? You know, why is that a superfood? Are people struggling to actually source it over here? And there's a demand for it?
There's definitely a demand for it. It's an interesting little seed that it doesn't really have a strong taste, first off. But its claim to fame is its level of omega-3. So it's the highest plant-based source of omega-3. Mm-hmm. So on top of that, it's about 20% plant protein, and the rest of it is dietary fiber. Mm. So basically, it's a great thing to add to other foods to give a nutrition boost.
And it's one of those things that they come as these dry seeds, but you soak them in water, and they soak up a huge amount of volume of liquid, and they just expand into these amazing things. So really good for making something that's filling as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So the chia seeds actually absorb 10 to 12 times their weight in liquid. Wow. So you don't necessarily have to put it in liquid, but when you eat it, that sort of expands in your stomach as well.
Really
so
full up.
So it really fills you up.
Yeah. So if it's a great source of omega-3, then obviously if you're a vegetarian or a vegan, I presume it's almost invaluable.
Yeah, exactly. It's a good plant-based alternative of omega-3.
Because normally that would come from fish, right?
Exactly. Mm. Yeah. It's a slightly different type of omega-3 than comes in fish. But the plant version is called ALA, alpha-linolenic acid, and it's a good plant-based alternative. Mm.
And so over here, you know, people have sort of cottoned on to the fact that this seed is a bit of a superfood, and it's ticking all sorts of boxes. And then presumably there's loads of manufacturers are thinking, right, better put some chia seeds in this, or sure. I can offer that. So essentially when you set up your company, it's, well, all these wholesalers need this stuff, all these you know, people who are producing food need this stuff. And actually, sort of organic chia seeds from South America are what they should be having.
Yeah, I mean, it's when we started the company, it was one of those things where we started it because I'd go home to California and I saw chia seed everywhere. Mm. And, you know, it wasn't as popular when we started it here in the UK, and it's since grown quite a bit.
Yeah, it's everything. You're seeing them everywhere here now as well.
Yeah, so it just so happened that, Argentina is the biggest, one of the biggest producers of chia seed in the world. So we had a sort of happy...
And is that because of the weather or the ground, or is there a particular reason for it? Being so good,
it can grow in sort of temperate areas. It's originally from Mexico, but it can grow from parts of a little bit northern than that, but Mexico down to the north of Argentina.
And that's the sort of ideal growing conditions, really.
Yeah.
Excellent. So now you've got an interesting range. So we've got chia seeds, but you've also got extra virgin chia oil. I don't think I've seen that, guy.
No, we were looking at through some of the product listings earlier and was thinking, yes, I've heard of chia seeds, I've eaten chia seeds, heard of quinoa, made and eaten quinoa, all very good for you. But yeah, the chia oil sounds really interesting. You're going to have to explain this. How does it work? I'm trying to work it out in my head.
How do you squeeze the oil out of the seed?
So the little chia seeds are actually 30% oil. What we do is we cold press the chia seeds and get the oil out of that. And the oil is approximately 64% omega-3. So it's extremely high omega-3 oil.
Okay.
And Sorry, I should have brought some for tasting purposes, but it's a really nice light tasting oil.
Mm.
Not fishy at all. Really nice on a salad, dipping bread into. And again, a plant-based alternative for omega-3s.
And is it the kind of oil that we'd use? So like a really good quality olive oil you'd use for dressings rather than for cooking. Is it a similar kind of thing?
Yeah, it's not something you'd use for cooking.
No, I imagine it would burn.
It would destroy the properties of it. It's really nice as a dressing type of oil.
And Hiromi, I know you're obviously into nuts and all that sort of stuff. You must have seen a great growth in chia seeds as well. Is it a new sort of...
Well, I have them every morning in my smoothie.
Oh, good.
But are you seeing that as well? It's the sort of thing that what's happening now is that food is being treated as medicine almost.
Yes. Mm. Yeah. I mean, people are, I think, trying to improve their diets overall. And I think it started from just staying away from junk food. And I think more and more people are just looking and reading labels and reading a lot. And some of it probably not so accurate, I think the thirst for knowledge is there.
Mm. And I know what you started to do, Tom, is that you decided you were doing almost like business to business, really, weren't you? You're supplying manufacturers, but you've sort of moved away from that. Why is that? And if you were starting a food brand, would you recommend going business to consumer, be consumer facing, or would you? Is it easier to be business facing?
I'd say it's a very different world. I'm focusing most of my time on the retail side these days, and as I was mentioning earlier you're dealing with more of the social medias and dealing with the Twitter and Facebook that maybe on the B2B side of things is not as important.
So if you were selling into business, how do you do that?
A lot of trade fairs. We've done a lot of trade fairs. Yeah. That's really the big marketing channel.
And it's all about getting your distribution and the people who are going to help you to spread the product, rather than when you are B2C, it's about getting in front of the consumers and you need to convince them of why they should, spend their hard-earned money.
Yeah, I mean, for the chia seed front, the people who you're selling to already have some type of demand. Generally, they you're not, explaining something
so you're
new.
You're not trying to convert people to something like that. Yeah,
exactly. So it's already the market there. So it's a bit different where some of these products you have to explain things.
And I guess a lot of that, the way that you speak to consumers is all about kind of finding the stories. It sounds like even from what you were saying earlier, there's a really rich culture and all sorts of things to talk about from the country of origin. So is that the kind of thing that you're doing?
Well, yeah, I guess in our particular case, one of our big benefits of starting on the B2B side of things is that we really nailed down the supply chain, the quality side of things, and the traceability. So, I mean, a lot of other brands who maybe work with chia seed, they'll buy from a trader or, maybe not import it, or if they do import it, they don't have a connection to the source where they can really see where the stuff comes from. So really a point of differentiation for us is showing that traceability. So on our packages, we have a code you can put into our website and basically see where the stuff came from. So you can see the farms and the people who produced our chia seed.
And that's the consumer-facing packaging.
Exactly. So having the B2B side of business in the back, without that, would have been much harder.
Yeah, that's a really interesting idea. It's a very innovative way of taking those two sides that you've got, because you already had the B2B side and now you're going into B2C. It's a great way to kind of use one to help the other.
The other big thing on that point is really some of these foods are, you have to be careful about, especially organic, the pesticides. And having the knowledge and traceability to the source, we test everything up, down, sideways for all the pesticides, glyphosate, all these kind of baddies. So we know what we're getting and we know what we're presenting and selling to the consumer.
And if you're doing business to business, those guys will want to know that. They want to know that it's safe, because at the end of the day, they're going to be responsible, not you. If there's a consumer,
absolutely,
problem or whatever, they're going to be going. They're the ones that are going to get hammered for their brand. And I would guess, as you were saying, quite interesting guy, is that if actually starting off like that is probably quite a good discipline actually before you go consumer facing, because you've got to iron all that stuff.
You've got to get all the right things in the right places. And it's funny. I'm doing some work with a food safety organization at the moment, and it's funny how the consumers, they expect a certain level. Well, they expect the food to be safe. And if you start talking about it, people are like, well, hang on a minute. Is it not safe? And of course, there are all sorts of issues that can happen in the supply chain, or, you know, there's recalls and mm-hmm. stuff like that. There is this understanding of people expect a certain thing. But the fact that you can communicate that, you know, in quite an interesting interactive kind of way, like, you know, scan this code and you know, go and learn the story is really powerful.
Mm. Again, how aware do you think people are about South American types of products? Is it something that people are beginning to look out for in terms of, you know, Peru or
Brazil,
Argentina,
Argentinian
Brazil.
Steakhouse and stuff is a popular kind of way to go,
super
isn't it?
Steaks, yeah.
Superfood steak.
Chilean wine.
Chilean wine, I'm a big fan. Mm. Argentinian wine, nice Malbec.
Mm. Oh, yeah, I forgot about that, Malbec, yeah. Mm,
goes with the steak.
Mm. Excellent. And then moving on to quinoa. Mm, now, yeah. that seemed to be fashionable for a while. Is that baited a bit, or am I just not hearing about it quite as much?
I think it's just coming to the mainstream probably as a healthy rice alternative.
It's just normal now, like couscous. It's just a normal thing to have as opposed to...
Mm, yeah, maybe that's it. It's funny how trends kind of come and they go. And it's not really that the food then disappears, but it just stops getting talked about as much,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah.
Is that something that you have to kind of battle with, or are you riding the wave of, you know, quinoa is everywhere?
Well, I mean, for the retail brand, again, we're working with Royal Quinoa, and and that's not a name I made up, even though it sounds nice. It, you know, it's Quinoa Real, and
So it's not a brand name. It's not something that was invented.
It's like a DOC, champagne is from champagne.
Yeah.
Okay.
But it's like I said, it's grown at 4,000 meters in a particular area of Bolivia in the southwest, and it's generally a larger than mm-hmm. grain, and so when you cook it, it really puffs up as a nicer, fluffier dish than maybe the stuff you buy as the Sainsbury's Essential, you know, brand. It's a really nice, fluffy dish.
That sounds great, because
I can't do quinoa.
I've tried to cook it from raw, where it's almost like that grain, mm-hmm. and it doesn't seem to fluff up very much, and it will just get stuck in your teeth. there's a brand out there, the name escapes me. They have these kind of pouches where you just microwave it, and, mm-hmm. and they do some really good kind of combinations of quinoa and lentils and all sorts of stuff like that, and they always seem to do really well in terms of the fluffiness and the So yeah, I guess it's not
doesn't do it.
You're not a very healthy person, though, are you?
I am. I'm the healthy one. You're the one that worries me, honestly. So,
well, you're the healthy first.
One. But I mean, I do. I just something about it. I'll eat it, but I just I think I need to learn how to cook it properly, mm. and I think I need to work out some really great combinations.
Yeah,
if you know
and
what
I think
mean.
I think that's what the consumers want as well. Is they don't just want the products, but they want the stories, and they want the education, and they want the recipes.
Yeah.
So that they can find out about these really interesting things and where they come from and what to do with them.
Mm. Yeah. Definitely what to do with them, how to make the most of them. So, Kinomi nuts. Now, I've had these before. They've been lovely. They've been developed to explore perfection in the form of a nut. And I know you've been experimenting with spice combinations, which is what you love doing best, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And we've got a range now. Now, I haven't seen this packaging before. The packaging looks fabulous.
Thank you. Mm. Thank you.
So how did you get that done, Hiromi? I know you've been doing this for a little while.
Yes.
Is it just something that you keep refining and you get feedback and then work out your packaging colours?
Pretty much. Yeah, so I have a great designer. So I'm not very good with anything visual. So she developed the packaging, and it's I really like it because it's different, and there's different things you can do with the tubes afterwards. Somebody's turned it into a
pencil
holder.
So just to explain, we've got tubes that are sort of like toilet rolls, but tiny toilet rolls.
That's about the right size, yeah. It's kind of like a Pringles packet, but much smaller, yeah.
Tiny, they're lovely. They just fit right in your hand.
Yeah, they're fantastic.
And they've got some lovely colours, and really nice. I'd want to, you know, I'd like to keep this after I've eaten the nuts, but still don't know what I'll put in it. But, you know, this because the packaging's so nice, you want to keep it somehow.
What would you put in there? Your loose change, maybe?
Yeah, or maybe some jewellery or something.
But no, it is beautiful, and it looks very premium as well in terms of the finish and the feel to it. And beautiful colours.
Thank you.
So explain the range to us. So I know cashews, mm-hmm. I know almonds.
Mm-hmm.
Just tell me first about the flavourings you have with those, and then we'll move on to this other type of nut I've never even heard of.
Okay, so all three nuts have the same base coat. It's soy sauce, kombu, and sake. And I was basically serving them as part of my Japanese cooking class as nibbles. And so I was using the soy sauce and the sake and the kombu because they're essential for Japanese cooking and very much part of the class. And people started asking to buy them. And then it just kind of turned into a business from there. But the spices came much later.
So I'm just eating some of your, you know what I like to do this. I'm just eating some of your cashew nuts. Do you want some?
I'm going to try some as well. I don't think I've actually tried these before, but I know that I've seen them around a number of places. And I see Hiromi popping up in all sorts of different places, you know, different events and speaking. And all
so
sorts
they look
of stuff.
Like they're covered in a sort of dusting of something.
Yes. So the cashew nuts are covered in Arctic seaweed and amchur. So, well, not amchur, sumac. So the sumac tastes a little bit like yukari, which is a Japanese condiment. And so the combination is, I mean, this is probably my most Japanese flavor.
It's very subtle. The cashew still really, really comes through. The spice doesn't overpower, or the flavoring doesn't overpower it.
Well, I use very good cashews. I want you to taste the cashews.
So they're waku waku cashews, they're called. Yeah. Cashew nuts with sumac and Arctic seaweed.
Very, very good.
Thank you.
Well, and where are the cashews from?
These are from a cooperative in India.
Mm-hmm.
And I've just tasted, you're going to like these.
Spicy ones, are they?
Yeah, because as we're doing this show more and more, getting to know what you like and what you don't like.
It's very simple. I like everything that is food and everything that is booze. And that's about it.
No, but I know a bit more about your taste profile now. So this is called Pori Pori almonds, and they're almonds with amchur and smoked red jalapeno. Now, I really like these.
Yeah, these are good.
They're not very, very hot or anything, but the smokiness and the jalapenos are great.
Yeah, again, it's quite subtle.
Mm-hmm.
I've had smoked almonds before without the spice.
Right.
And I often find that the smokiness is often feels a bit fake.
Yeah, well, but most of it's artificial.
Yeah, exactly. And tastes like it as well. But these are, it tastes natural and clean.
So these are organic Spanish almonds.
Yes.
And they're coated in this blend of smoked red. Do you say jalapeno?
It's jalapeno in the States.
And Indian amchur. And they have got a slightly tart finish.
So that's the amchur, which is a green mango.
If you have got these little sort of, what do you call these?
The tubes.
Then as soon as you open those, I presume you're just going to get that smokiness come straight out of the tube.
Well, unfortunately, they're in a cellophane bag. But if you open these, the mini bags, then
what you got.
Yeah.
Oh, they're quite nice. And pori pori means what?
Pori. So all the names are Japanese onomatopoeia. And so the cashews, waku waku, is a sensation of being very excited. And pori pori is a small nibbling sound, crunchy. So eventually I will run out of words. But
I'm up for those.
But there's many more words, so you can have a much wider range of nuts. You probably run out of nuts before you run out of words.
Probably.
But it's a really nice way of kind of playing with the food, and it's helping to communicate what it's going to be like. It's fantastic.
Now, this is the one I haven't heard of. So Barry Barry.
Yeah.
Now, that's a loud crunching sound in Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a baru nut. Now, I've never heard baru nut, ever.
This is a new one on
me too. They look like kidney beans, actually. Kidney beans that are sort of slightly torpedo-shaped. What nut is that?
It's actually technically a legume. And it comes from the Cerrado, which is the savanna in northern Brazil. And right now I'm the only person to sell them in the UK. And they grow wild.
Interesting.
They're crunchy.
No, they're good. They are crunchy, but they've got like a meatiness to them almost.
Moisture to them.
Yeah.
So where do you get hold of these then? How did you manage to find a supplier for this?
Trade show.
But we have our South American connection here.
Yeah, I know. I'm thinking maybe Tom can get
Have you tried these before, Tom?
I've never heard of them. No, they're really nice though.
They are really good.
They're very good. What you've said here in the way you describe them, they're very crunchy.
Mm-hmm.
They taste peanutty to some degree, I would say, with a little sort of soy nut flavour. But on first glance, you really don't recognise them as a nut, do you?
No.
They look a little bit odd. They taste lovely.
They're really, really good.
Really good. Very good. Tell me about Kinomi nuts. You know, why have you decided to go into that? And, you know, because it's very hard to make it in the food business.
Yes, it is.
And, you know, lots of the sectors are overcrowded. Mm-hmm. I do think your packaging, and I do think packaging is key to
the branding
out.
It really helps you stand out on
you've
shelf.
you've got to do it but how did you arrive into this world of nuts?
Well, so it really was because I was teaching Japanese cooking from home, and I was flavoring mixed nuts back then with a soy sauce sake and kombu combination, which were very integral to the lessons, and just serving them as nibbles, and people just started asking to buy them, and then eventually it turned into a business. So, and I think had I done any market research, I probably would not have entered nuts.
But it's been a bit of a journey for you, hasn't it? Because I think we bumped into each other. Maybe it was like three or four years ago,
yeah,
something like that.
Yeah.
I think we got a tube home from somewhere in the middle of northwest London, and we're chatting away about what you were doing, and I think you were working with Cinnamon Bridge back then, about developing the product and trying to work out how to do this thing that you were really passionate about, which was doing crazy, wacky, Willy Wonka spice type stuff with nuts. So what has the journey been like? Because it sounds great now. We can look at this amazing packaging, which is the amazing product, but it sounds so simple, and yet I'm sure it wasn't.
No. For me, the creating the flavors is the part that I absolutely love, and as well as finding the nuts, because that's the other thing that I really wanted to get across is, the nuts all have individual flavors. You don't always get that when you buy supermarket nuts, but I do pick the nuts based on their flavor, and so that they are organic, and they're not certified organic, so I can't call them organic nuts.
Sure.
But, the nuts themselves are organic. And because I think they taste better than the other ones. You know, if I can find a conventional nut that tastes as good, I'm happy to use them, But I'm also really allergic to pesticides.
Really?
I cannot eat conventional raw nuts because I have a reaction.
Wow, that's a real surprise. I'm surprised that the pesticide can come through so strongly in the finished product, but I guess it makes sense, right?
Yeah.
It's part of a plant-based kind of thing.
So once they're cooked, I'm fine, but I can't eat them raw. And the organic ones, I'm fine with.
That's really interesting.
So you've had this idea. You're doing, your sort of Japanese cooking and all that sort of thing. How do you do it so you can actually make a living? Because the leap between...
Right.
People saying, oh, they're really nice, can you do that? And you're making that connection is one thing. And this happens to a lot of food producers.
Yeah.
A huge number. And so many people go, oh, that's lovely, you should make that and sell it in Sainsbury's. Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, that's
easy.
In
all sorts of businesses. People go, oh, I can do this. Why am I doing it for someone else? I could go and do it for myself and all the money is mine. There's just so many bits and pieces that happen in between.
Yeah.
At what point did you decide to make that leap?
So I was... I don't know. Do you know Ms. Marmite Lover?
Yeah. She's a great blogger. Yeah, interesting.
So she used to run a thing called the Underground Farmers Market out of her flat. And I went along to publicize my classes. But, because it was a farmers market, I had to sell something. Yeah, so I bagged up the nuts and sold them in addition to giving away my flyers. And she had put together a little panel of people who would evaluate your products. So I really just wanted advice, but somehow ended up on the panel and was told, great story, lovely product, but you need to work on the packaging. It was a little cellophane bag with a sticker on it. And then a distributor approached me after the whole panel thing had ended and said, if you want to do this, I'll help you. And that's kind of how I got into it. Yeah.
Because distribution is everything. And one of the things that Guy and I have been talking about recently is, especially on this show and also in our day jobs, we see so many food producers and so many people in the industry. But actually, not many are brilliant at marketing and the branding. And if you don't crack that, you're really going to struggle to make a proper living.
It just doesn't come naturally to so many people, I think. And especially, maybe it's a British thing, although obviously we're not surrounded by an entirely British people here today. But, you know, people just don't like talking about themselves. It feels uncomfortable. And yet that is what you have to do to get the message out there. Mm-hmm. Is there anything that you've been doing other than the cooking classes that have worked really well for you that might be interesting to hear about?
Being in subscription boxes has been absolutely great. Yeah.
So by subscription boxes, what do you mean?
So there are many of them they're all themed. So lots of sort of health, fitness, that kind of clean eating, and every month for a set fee, they will send you a box of snacks usually. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten myself into a bunch of them, and that's really helped my social media and the marketing, because people who do subscription boxes are absolutely brilliant at social media.
Mm-hmm. Good. I mean, so actually a really good tip is, if it's not your natural bent or you're new to the sector, maybe piggybacking into something else would be a good idea. Yeah. Piggybacking onto somebody who's selling somewhere else, or doing subscription boxes or any of those delivery things.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of the things you often hear in the world of marketing is you want to go where your customers are. Mm. And if your customers are already buying subscription boxes because they want that discovery of new, interesting, tasty things, that's the place to go. Mm-hmm. It obviously doesn't work for everybody. You know, if you've got a chilled product, it's very difficult to get kind of muscle in on some of those schemes. Mm. But it seems like a really, really smart move.
The other thing for me as well, Guy, though, is you've got to look at your package in competition with everybody else.
Yeah.
So whilst these are lovely, the reason why I think they work is because they don't look like anybody else's. I mean, they're very distinct.
Yeah, they really stand out. I mean, when you go to the typical supermarket aisle for looking for nuts, it's bags of stuff. Mm. And more often than not, the bags get crinkled. And so you can't even see what the nut is from looking from a distance.
I mean, it's very wholesale, I always think, when you go down an aisle.
Especially when you get the own brand stuff. It's just, you know, they're all, if you go to Sainsbury's, they're all orange. If you go to Tesco, they're all blue. And you can't really see the difference between the different things you're buying. But this form factor is completely different. I mean, it's the famous toilet roll, like Sue said.
Sorry, well, it's not really. I'm just trying to describe it. It's a tube.
Yeah, it's a small handheld tube, but it really must stand out when you put it alongside other people's nuts.
Yeah.
And you know, people like Goo, we've had James Avedik on the programme, and also Pippa Murray of Pip and Nut.
Yeah, they all
part
do a great job.
Part of the success for me, particularly with Pippa, is that her brand, peanut butter, doesn't look like anybody else's. It's very strong.
Absolutely. And it goes beyond the packet or the pot or the tube or whatever you put it in. It also goes through all of the copy and the messaging and the words on the pack. And you've done a great job here with this, with your onomatopoeic names for each of the products. Mm. It's it just gives it some personality, and that's
absolutely.
It's such a saturated market out there that it really needs to stand out.
And then how do you decide on your pricing? Because this is, for me, is another key marketing element. I mean, some people wouldn't consider pricing to be in the marketing mix, but it certainly is. It is positioning. Where did you decide? Are you a premium? It looks like it.
Yeah, it's definitely premium. I think that I probably set my retail based more on where I am cost-wise. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, there's obviously an upper end beyond which people will not pay.
Yeah. They won't buy nuts that are 50 quid a pack.
So, yeah, so it's a bit of a juggling act, but I am working on very slim margins at the moment.
Mm. And Tom, how did you manage to decide your pricing? Because it's a really important factor, isn't it?
Yeah, I guess. I mean, we're just because of our the sort of added value of our products, in the sense of the traceability and to source and the quality control. If you see that our packaging is also a big thing, we have a spout pouch for the chias and quinoas, which no one else is doing. So it's a way to set ourselves apart as well on packaging. But definitely going for more of the premium end, giving consumers the sense of the highest quality chia, quinoa, and these sort of products from South America.
That spout packaging sounds interesting. Is that something you invented yourselves, or is it something that you were able to buy from a different, you know, something that doesn't normally contain seeds or grains and adapt it?
It's one of the pouches that you may see for liquids or, not chia seeds or quinoa.
Yeah.
But what we had a lot of testing with the packaging, and had a lot of good positive feedback, because you can pour sort of the perfect dose of chi and quinoa that you may need.
And is it resealable as well?
It is, sure. It's like a nice plastic.
That's brilliant. Yeah. Because whenever I do, which isn't that frequently, but whenever I have quinoa or those kind of seeds, you open the bag always splits down the side, the stuff goes everywhere, and it's a nightmare. So that sounds fantastic.
But that's to do with pricing, though, again, Guy.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Because if you know your packaging's going to cost you, you know, less than a penny, you know, that's where you get your margins.
In many ways,
what you're saying here, you know, is Hiromi, is it's making your margins quite tight by having beautiful packaging.
And also the organic raw ingredient, which I'm assuming is much more expensive
much
than...
Much more,
So what is the price point for the pack of nuts?
The tubes are £4 and the bags are £2.
That's quite a lot to pay. I have to say they're lovely, though.
They are, absolutely. And I think if you're positioning it at the premium end of the market, then people aren't... yes, there will be some people who look at the price and go, no. But there are people who want that, the experience and the packaging and the product inside is the experience.
But do you remember when we had the Snuffling Pig Boys on the... now, they were very interesting because they have moved from food into gifts. And what they were doing is they were making their packets as gifts as opposed to, you know, this is a dinner party buy, you know, whatever. Yeah. And strongly sort of went into that area. These look very gift-like.
They do, absolutely.
Mm. And then people will pay £4 because it's a present for somebody.
I think they were using Kilner jars or these, you know, these glass jars.
Right.
And you can, you know, buy a jar full of pork scratchings, I think they do. But yeah, really interesting when they were talking about that.
Yeah, they still made me laugh because they did that.
They did an advent calendar. With pork scratchings.
Fantastic. Genius. Absolutely genius.
Why didn't I think of that?
No, why didn't I think of that either? Well, Tom Spillane and Dean Soul. Say Andean. Andean Soul. If you want to find out more, go on to andeansoul.com. Black chia seeds, royal quinoa. I'm going to have to learn how to cook that stuff. And then very interesting, the chia oil. I mean, that sounds like a really interesting product. So please have a look out for that. And then, of course, I've just tasted them. My favourite... definitely the almonds. I like that one.
I like the Barry Barry.
The new ones.
The new ones. Mm. Really, really good.
And that's Hiromi. And what's your website, Hiromi?
It's kinominuts.com.
Kinominuts.com.
Can you buy them online?
You can buy them online.
And have you managed to get them into any retailers yet?
I think they're in a couple of shops that I can't tell you off the top of my head.
But they're in Ocado, aren't they? Can I go in Ocado? No. So just online. So go to kinominuts.com. Mm-hmm. Definitely try that Baru Baru. Never seen those before.
Yeah, really, really interesting. Mm. Great find.
Mm.
Hope they take off.
Thank you very much for joining us. You've been listening to the Food Talk Show, and we're in all sorts of places. Can't even remember them all now. So we're syndicated.
You need to write them down, Sue.
I will do that. And you can listen to us all sorts of places. But of course, we've got hundreds of podcasts. So if you go to foodtalk.co.uk, you can download them there. And we've got a really good search function. So you can just go in and download those while you're in the gym or in the car or walking around. And if you want to recommend any future guests that are doing something groundbreaking, please get in touch with us. Or if you want to communicate with us, say hi or...
tell us where we made a mistake or
something like that.
Something like that.
Yeah, just go on to Twitter and that's @FoodTalkShow. So it was lovely to speak with you today and have a good week. Bye.